Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Penn Sunday School, and to our listening ears, all nature sings and round us rings the music of the spheres.
This is Penn Sunday School.
Brothers, sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School. I am your director, Rennie Rich, coming to you from an undisclosed, privately held tailor shop and museum. Today, Penn is finishing up his chat with Adam Carolla in history while he's in actuality in Spain. And now here they are preaching live, Penn Jillette and Adam Carolla.
This is Penn Sunday School.
Yeah, this is Penn Jillette preaching love right now. We're going to go back to my conversation with Adam Carolla. We're going to talk about jugglers and comedians and comparing the two because, that's two things we know. I'm a juggler, he's a comedian. We're also going to talk about some stuff that was more current back in mid-March when we recorded this, but still good. So keep in mind, if it seems like we're unstuck in time, that we are. And now, here's Adam Carolla interviewing me.
In the green room at Jimmy Kimmel's stand-up
theater. Where it's packed.
It is packed. Still getting over the devastation of Shin Lim's cards being added using Photoshop.
Well, I don't know exactly what program they used. I'm not...
Yeah, he's spraying those cards. So,
Adam, you can see the faces on the cards.
I just want to believe
badly. What photographic process are you doing that lays those cards out beautifully?
You're right.
I want to take a little bit back to the heartbreak. He might have actually been springing cards. He could have been doing that.
And then they put the faces on them.
They just helped it out. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to clean it up.
Card filter. So I had a moment in time where I decided to be a juggler as well.
Did you?
I did, because I was always coordinated. It was good hand-eye stuff. And my buddy, Philip Welford, was a juggler who was just a great friend, and he ended up in Branson, and then he got this early onset dementia, and it's very sad, and he died, you know, fairly young.
And there's his life.
There's his life, about 12 years ago. But he was a good friend of mine, and he rode the unicycle and juggled in his act. And I could already ride the unicycle.
It's a great thing.
So it's like I could ride the unicycle. You're doing comedy and juggling. He's working cruise ships. He's making money. He's doing commercials. I was like, if he could just teach me. And he tried for a few days. And I realized I was sort of like, I don't think I'm going to ever get good enough at this. I should work harder on just getting better at comedy versus burn the calories trying to juggle. It is also insane, but it's sort of like what you were talking about, which is this is in the, you know, late 80s, very early 90s, I still thought juggling and riding a unicycle was a sort of viable path to show business.
Here's the thing. Magicians, comics fucking hate jugglers. Because if you get, this is the thing that's amazing. If you get a solid 12 minutes of a juggling routine, I mean, a good solid 12, I mean, funny and entertaining. Everybody likes it. With that 12, you will work the rest of your life.
Yes.
You'll never get rich. You'll make a good living, can support a family. You'll be in six figures. You really will. I mean, that's good money. And you'll go on cruise ships. You'll do corporate shows. You'll do a little variety, you know. But a comic, we know a few guys. You know, there's probably 100 guys who are able to stay at a certain level and always work. But pretty much, you either break into a sitcom or you get your own gig. The people that stay at a level of constantly working, and I don't know whether this is the venues or whether this is psychological, comics that do that for a long time, like Bobby Slayton, and, you know, we all know. We could all name 10 of them. Don't seem to like it.
Right.
You meet 65-year-old juggler, who's been working 45 years in juggling.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing fine.
Yeah, I know. That was my take. Like, Philip would go do a cruise ship,
yeah.
Then he'd go play a club, and then he'd go to Caesar's Tahoe, mm-hmm. get booked for a weekend, and then ultimately end up in Branson
yeah.
playing, maybe you know this
guy. The Andy Williams Theater.
He opened for Andy Williams and would go on the road with Andy Williams sure. and would explain to me back in the mid later 80s when I was making 12, 13 bucks an hour as a carpenter, he would go out with Andy for 6, 7 weeks, 9 weeks, open for him and explain to me he got $6,000 a week.
Yeah.
And I was like, $6,000 a week?
But when you said his name, I didn't recognize it, and I know this shit.
Well,
no one recognized that you're listening to, but he was working his whole life. Now, I got to say this. That was the goal Teller and I had.
To work.
Everything else is an accident.
Right, happy accident.
By 1985, we were making, more money than our dads did. My dad was a jail guard. Mm-hmm. His dad was a commercial artist. We're making more money than our dads. We were living very happy, and we knew all these guys that were doing cruise ships and corporate shows and little theaters. We were thrilled. And then someone said, try off Broadway, and we said, what the fuck?
Right.
But, if you talk to Paul McCartney, Madonna, Howard Stern, they will all tell you they were not as famous as they should have been.
I bumped all of them for you today, by
thank
the
you.
Way. They were all booked.
Yeah.
Let's get Penn in here.
Paul McCartney actually says the Beatles weren't as successful as they should have been.
Really?
He's actually made that sentence. He's actually said that sentence.
What does he mean by that?
He means that he is more ambitious than anyone you've ever seen.
Yeah, and he's still going.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm
no,
not.
No, but I was thinking,
I was every,
is he 81, 82?
Yeah.
I was thinking the other day.
Maybe.
I was watching Martha Stewart on a Skechers commercial. I was like, somebody should force Paul McCartney to have a kid with Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart has 17 jobs. She's in her 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, you think of our parents. I don't know if your parents made it in their 80s, but think of our parents in their 80s. My grandparents, they were sitting around with shawls.
Mm-hmm.
They had blankets over their legs. And they were watching daytime
TV.
My
dad was a little different because he retired as a jail guard young, 55, and then worked the coin business. He was a numismatist.
And what is that?
He's a coin collector, coin dealer. And so he worked rather late. But it is also different because age really has changed and health has really changed.
Jane Fonda, I saw her on The View this morning, 85 years old, spry and screaming into a microphone. Oh, and so the guy who I wanted to check you on was my buddy Philip ends up in Branson.
Mm-hmm.
He's working. He went out there with Andy Williams. He was opening for Andy Williams. Andy loves
him. Isn't it great? That was my first guess.
Yes, it is great. And also, like I said, when he would make $6,000 a week and explain that he did 20 minutes a night, I was like, wait, you know how much you make an hour? Everything was being converted because I was getting 13 bucks an hour. Yeah. But he went out there and hooked up with a magician called Kirby
Birch, yeah.
Kirby, and said the guy was a nightmare.
Yep.
And I saw, I remember Philip, all he said to me was, I'm breaking off from Andy Williams and I'm doing my own theater, I don't know, one of the Osmond theaters or something mm-hmm. like that. And I've hooked up with a magician and his name is Kirby. And then he showed me a picture of a guy in swashbuckling captain's boots that went up past his knee, that front flap that went past his knee.
He's in combat.
Yes, dressed sort of like Michael Jackson in his later years with too much makeup and eyeliner, sort of doing the face of illusion with the hands flying out, hair puffed up like a cockatiel, And I just looked at this guy and I said, I don't know, Philip, this guy seems like a douchebag to me. And he's like, hey, he's popular. He's a magician. He's a great guy. We're pairing up, And then later on, I don't know if Kirby screwed him over. What happened to Kirby? Or there was allegations. I don't know what happened.
All of that happened.
All of it happened.
Yeah.
Is he still working? Is he around?
I think so. I think he's still trying to work now and again. But you bring up a very good point. Jugglers are maybe the only ones in show business who know how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you walk into a room, there's juggling conventions, and I go to them. You walk in the room, you look around, and you know exactly where you are, precisely where you are. Now, with a magician, what are they going to say? I'm more magic than you?
Right.
And with a comedian, I'm funnier than you?
Right.
It's real. I mean, we knew that Gilbert Gottfried was great. We knew. But,
no, but you know, it's really hard to quantify.
That guy just did 7 clubs with back crosses.
Right.
I will never know someone well who's able to do that unless it's that guy.
right. Totally it's quantifiable.
Totally. So I can already tell you the personality of your friend Philip because I know he's a juggler. You know, there's a certain kind of humility that comes with knowing precisely how good you are.
Yeah. Well, so
and a kind
this
of
is, no, this is a very interesting point because first things first, I bring this up, but it always made me laugh. Great Dixieland musician, pianist, always had his band, Bob Ringwald, father to Molly Ringwald, grew up the street, blind, knew him well, said to me once, I like 2 things. I like jazz and I like comedy. I was like 18. I said, Bob, I love jazz. I love comedy. And he goes, yep, Dixieland and Gallagher. I'm glad you had that reaction.
Greatest thing ever said.
Right, because I was like, I am picturing
Miles and Lenny
Davis
Bruce.
And Lenny Bruce and Smoke and jazz and whatever and art, you know, and he's picturing the Country Bear Jamboree and a guy pulling shit, you know, smashing watermelons with a sledge-o-matic. And, but I was young. I was really like 17. I was standing in his backyard with him and I remember thinking, okay, so people think differently and have different... And different views on stuff, even when I think we're thinking about the same
thing. I will be telling
that
story for so long that it'll become my story. I'll be saying I was in the backyard when I was 18 with Molly Ringwald's father, and he said, I like 2 things, jazz and comedy. The punchline is perfect.
It's
you
perfect.
Could never write that.
I couldn't write it. I couldn't write it now or when I was 17 and a half. And
I mean, I can't think of another 2 examples.
It was perfect.
I can't think of another 2 examples.
It was perfect. And if I'd walked away before he had spat out his 2 favorite forms of jazz and comedy, then I would have forever thought that Bob Ringwald and I were simpatico.
Right, right.
And our tastes.
Because we both like Coltrane.
That's
and
right.
We both like Richard Pryor.
Right.
Coltrane and Richard Pryor, we both dig them.
Right.
They are fabulous.
So... what you brought up.
I mean, you should. I mean, if you wanted to put it at the same level of abstraction, you'd say Pete Fountain,
right?
You know, Boots Randolph, Boots Randolph and Gallagher.
Well, so now what you brought up, which is interesting, which is when it comes to comedy, and I think people feel this way about sports to a certain degree too, but you brought up juggling. Juggling, totally quantifiable. Magic, not so much. Music, not so much. Stand up. You know, you go, well, who's the, you know, who do you think the best stand up is? I don't know. Jerry Seinfeld. All right. But on any given night, I could go out and be better than Jerry Seinfeld for 15 minutes.
Well, do you know what Steve Martin said in his book, Born Standing Up? It's one of the most brilliant things ever. He said, being great is easy. Being good is really, really hard. Anybody can go out and have really good nights that are just transcendent. But just to be able to go out every single night and be good,
right. That's
the hard thing.
But with a juggler, as you said, 7 pins and around the back, it's not like a crappy or mid-level juggler could pull that off on a given night.
No.
You just cannot physically do it.
No.
And so it's so quantifiable. So as a magician, as a musician, as a comedian. You can say, oh, I can see this guy is this comedian. He's selling out Madison Square Garden, but I get to think to myself, I'm still funnier than that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And then somehow sleep at night. You can't do that and as a juggler and believe it.
And find another 20 guys that agree with you.
Yes.
Yeah, Adam, you are funnier.
Right. But as a juggler, you can't do that.
No, you have no chance.
And so like when you're first leading down this road, I was like, oh, Philip, you're going to say Philip was super confident because he had this skill, but Philip was super humble because he realized there were 2,800 guys on in North America who could juggle better than him.
And if you said to him, how good a juggler are you? He would say, I make a living. I love doing it.
Yeah.
That would be the total answer.
Right.
It wouldn't be like Kirby Birch with his boots going.
Herbert Birch. And
I mean, that's a real different mindset.
Where's Bobby Barasini?
Oh, boy, but you know, they killed him with the backstage footage.
Yeah, he had
footage of him punching
his orangutan.
Yeah, right? Spraying him and horrible stuff, tasing him.
Is he alive?
I don't know. I think maybe the orangutans got him.
So was Kirby Birch a good good magician?
I'm sorry. Well, you know, we all like each other.
Right. He wasn't even good.
No.
It's so funny. Philip just showed me a headshot of the guy, and he said, I'm hooking up with this guy in Branson. I said, this guy, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. He's wearing captain's boots and like Aquanet.
We don't need to call Pat to get the answer on this. Don't hook up with him.
Right. How did you hook up with Teller?
Just the way life goes. You know, when I was in high school, I bought a stereo from a guy who was doing these weird classical music shows in Amherst, where Teller went. And, he asked me, you know, I was 17 years old. He said, he was doing this Bach cantata with this, weird group he had of Amherst College alumni in the Five College area, Amherst, Massachusetts, called the Ottmar Scheck Memorial Society for the Preservation of Unusual and Disgusting Music. Wow. It was like a PDQ Bach thing. You know? And I was, you know, 17 years old. And he said, do you think you could play the bass drum part to Beethoven's Fifth while juggling? I said, yeah.
Really?
He said, I said, yeah, I can learn anything. I'm good at practicing.
Oh, you do the kick drum
and
while juggling?
On the side. Yeah. Right. No, on the side, be able to bounce and do stuff like that. Oh,
bounce the ball. Yeah.
Or I think I hit it with a club, actually. But and I just said, I couldn't do it then. I just said, very prescient thing to say that I think I try to tell my children. If you learn to practice, you can learn anything.
Right.
But learning to practice is difficult. Very few people know how to practice.
Right.
But I knew how to practice. I was good at practicing. I had that mind-numbing, I will do this for 300 hours, and I'll be able to do it. He also then said, I want to do the Cacciatorian saber dance, you know. And do you think you could throw plungers around me and get them to stick to a wall? I said, yeah, I think so. Turns out one of the hardest tricks I ever learned, but I learned to do it. And I went to do the show, and it was really weird because all these people were alumni of Amherst College. They were smart. They were erudite. To me, they knew everything. And I was 17, failing out of high school, and they were all like 25, you know. And you know that age range is incredible.
Yeah.
So I went there, and then there was this guy who was a Latin teacher in Jersey who was Teller. And he was pretending to be blind, and he was selling pencils outside the concert hall and reciting poetry in Latin that he'd written that was really funny if you knew Latin. That's the level of erudition of this show. And I met Teller, and we chatted a little bit, and I thought he was just crazy smart. And then, a year later, I was essentially homeless for a long while. And then a couple of years later, I was living in New York and I had no money. I was practicing juggling 8 hours a day with my partner, 7 days a week. We had this little apartment in what was then the Lower East Village, very dangerous, Hell's Angels and everything around. And we had to find one apartment with high ceilings. And we practiced like all day, all day, crazy. And we had no money. It was, you know, peanut butter sandwiches and powdered milk, and that's all we lived on. And Teller was working as a Latin teacher. And you know, if you don't have a job, a guy who's teaching has a lot of money.
Yeah.
So he would call me up. I didn't like him. He'd call me up and say, I'll take you out to dinner Friday. It was like, whoa!
Right.
You know? And by the way, the story from the other side is exactly the same. Teller says he didn't like me, but I bought his attention with dinner.
Right.
And he would take me out to dinner and we would talk. And then I saw Teller at a library show, like in a basement, for like 35 people doing magic. And I went, Jesus, this is a different thing. This is not a guy torturing women.
Right.
This is not a guy
full of wearing the captain's boots.
He was not wearing captain's boots. Although he might have been wearing tights, who knows? But I went, whoa. And we started talking about magic. And I said, and this is not actually contradictory to what I said, but it might seem it to you. While I was juggling, I was also doing a lot of card tricks. When I say card tricks, I mean manipulations. I wasn't trying to fool people. I was just going, look, I can shuffle with one hand.
Right.
I can do all this stuff. So we started talking about magic, and Teller kind of, who's always been a bit of a teacher, said, you know, try reading these books and stuff like that. And I was starting to work as a juggler, and I went to Ringling Brothers Barnum Bailey, greatest show on earth, Clown College. And I actually got to be, when you're living on the streets and have no money, you can learn to juggle for tips pretty quickly. And I was very good. And I got this job at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, and I called up and I said to the guy who booked me, I was the highest they'd ever paid because the guy knew I could get people's attention outdoors doing a show. And I said, I got this magician I want to bring with me. And he said, well, I got no more money in my budget. And I said, well, can I just give him half of my money? And the guy went, yeah. So I called up Teller and said, you want to do a real, you've always been a Latin teacher who did magic on the side. You want to be a real magician and work out of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival? He said, yes, more than anything. And I said, well, we start in August. And he said, perfect. And I said, and we finish up, I think it's first week in October. And Teller went, oh, well, I start teaching then again. And I just got tenure.
And was he at Amherst, did he say?
No, he was teaching in Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Because of Vietnam. But that's a whole other story. And he said, I'm supposed to be teaching then. And I just said one of the meanest things ever said to anyone. I said, oh, sorry I called. I thought you were a magician, not a Latin teacher. Bye-bye. And the phone rang 2 hours later, and he said, I won't quit, but I'll take a leave of absence, which is really funny because Teller still has the letter. And supposedly, he's still on that leave of absence. And it ties in with something else because John Stewart was a student at that class and was enrolled in Mr. Teller's Latin class for the next year.
Really?
And then was told, he's not going to be here. He's out doing magic.
Really?
And then John Stewart followed Mr. Teller's career. And John Stewart has said, all I've wanted in life is to be more famous than my teacher at Lawrence High School that left before he taught me Latin.
Oh, he's at high school. Wow.
So, if you ever say to yourself, you know, John Stewart would be so much better if he had a foundation in the classics. If he knew Latin and Greek and could quote the Iliad and the Odyssey, he'd be better. You can just say, I know whose fault that is.
It's
Teller's fault.
Wow.
And we talked. I mean, we still talk romantically about that drive from Jersey to Minnesota, the two of us in a Datsun 210 station wagon, which I know you could fix.
Sure.
And
a Datsun, not a Nissan, a Datsun 210 wagon. Yeah.
That conversation of what magic should be and could be is really, and I say this without too much hyperbole, a little bit, is the foundation for what you would see on the Rio stage of Penn and Teller now.
It's such a inspiring story, and it's also, it's interesting. I'm very interested in how people don't recognize qualities in other people. So many people just sort of slid. I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Jimmy Kimmel because I'm sitting in a room with his name and face all
over
the place. But I met Jimmy. I was like, oh, this guy's the shit. This guy's got something going on. And everyone else would be like, ah, don't listen to that guy. And I was like, how come you don't see what I see in this person? And they're like, he's a behind the scenes guy. You know, he's not really. And I'm glad people miss it, because then you can find it and hit your wagon to it. But it's always incredible to me that people that are so outstanding and so obviously outstanding can just kind of slide past under everyone's radar for what seems like an extended period of time, oftentimes through many different venues. And, you know, Jimmy would bounce from one radio station to the other radio station. They'd go, ah, we don't, it doesn't really fit in around here. Just go somewhere else, you know? And it's like, and I guess I was the same way. Of course, then when Jimmy met me, he felt the same way. He's like, why isn't anyone listening to you? And I'm like, no one listens to me. And he's like, I'll listen to you. And so, and it sounds like you had that same thing.
Exactly.
With Teller.
Teller and I think this is so important. You know, we have Tommy Smothers actually said in a press release, now that we're not working, it's Penn and Teller.
Wow.
They're the longest. And people ask, and I always tell them.
The Smothers brothers were the longest running show out here?
I mean, no. They were the longest partnership, just in general. Because partnerships are way out of fashion. You know, you don't have Martin and Lewis, Abbott and Costello. So the reason is, I've always said, and I've said this so many times, but Teller and I are not based on friendship.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally on respect.
Mm-hmm.
We both believe that we do better stuff together than we do separately, and we still prove that individual projects.
No, agreed. And it's kind of up there with my adage where everyone's talking about who's nice, who's not nice. It's like, forget about who's nice, who's fair, who's smart, who treats people with dignity. Too much emphasis on nice. You know, we get along because he's nice and I'm nice. You'll get along much better, much longer if you have this base of respect, and you think you're not doing them a favor by going out on stage with them every night.
You know, Lennon and McCartney were in love. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were really in love. It may, as time goes on, we may find out that it really was sexual, but I think it was. They were really deeply in love. So as soon as they weren't in love, their whole world crumbled. You know, as soon as they at 28 found that, you know, maybe we want to marry women, you know, things crumble. Teller and I have always been like two guys running a dry cleaning shop.
Mm-hmm.
And people will tell you there are many times working together where we are clearly not getting along.
Mm-hmm.
We're not mean to each other. We're not disrespectful, but we're like two guys working to 7-Eleven. We're just getting through it. And, you know, it's clear that after, you know, almost 50 years, by any measurement, Teller's my best friend. He was the first one to hold my children after my wife and I, you know, all that stuff. Our relationship is essentially complete respect business partners, and that's so much more powerful. Totally. I mean, if you talk to me about how much you want to go out and laugh with Teller after a show and have a good time, I might tell you, don't fucking bother. But if you want to tell me who is the best person at thinking about this structure of a trick or a joke, I'll say you're not going to ever find better than Teller. And I believe that same thing is reciprocal.
All right, we'll take a break, and we really will get to a little news right after this.
Hi, this is Penn from Jolly Old England, and I'm using all sorts of groovy technology and digital services. I mean, to send this to you, I'm using all this stuff. I mean, so much of the stuff we do on our smartphones and all of that, it's the way we should live our lives. We control things that way. And with the world so digitized and automated, why stick to old school mailing and shipping? Do you like that segue? It's very nice. If you mail or ship often, let stamps.com do the hard part for you. Simply print postage and shipping labels right from your home or office. It's ready to go in minutes. It's no long lines, no complicated setups. You just go. And don't forget, they've been a sponsor of the show since 2013. 10 years of great service helping us and helping you It's such a good service. We use it for everything. We use it for everything. So you don't have to go to the post office. And also stuff, they got deals with USPS and UPS for up to 84% off. It automatically tells you the cheapest way to do it. They've been doing it for 25 years, indispensable to over a million businesses. You just got to do it. You don't have time to go to the post office, no matter who you are. Stamps.com, stamps.com, stamps.com. It's really easy. It's cheaper. It's just the greatest thing in the world. Sign up with promo code PEN for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter PEN. Stamps.com, they're great. I got to tell you, this Caldera Lab stuff is really, really good. There's a lot of sun out, and to ensure your skin is well prepared for the summer, in the summer, I've incorporated Caldera Labs into my routine, taking care of my skin. Look at this. The skin looks beautiful. It's never been simpler. Their products are clinically proven to help visibly reduce wrinkles, fine lines, and signs of aging, which I need. It's just wonderful. It's wonderful. Your skin feels really, really good. Just use the code PEN at Caldera Lab. That's CalderaLab.com to enjoy 20% off their finest products. It's really good. It's high performance skincare. You get to put nice stuff on your face and it feels really good. I use the clean slate, the base layer, and the good. Clean slate cleans you up. Base layer just kind of makes it all soft. And then the good is the night before. When you go to bed, you put it on. It's really good. I like it. An icon. I put it around my eyes. All this stuff makes your skin feel really, really groovy. It makes me, I think I look better. People say I look better. So good. Go to Caldera Labs. Get 20% off with our code PEN at CalderaLabs.com. That's 20% off at Caldera Labs by using the code PEN. Elevate your skincare game this summer with Caldera Labs. That's CalderaLab.com. Check it out.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Penn Jillette hanging out backstage at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club.
How full is it?
It's packed in this room. Chris has got a little news
guys.
For us.
Yeah. So actually, since we're in Vegas, I wanted to do some local news. And Siegfried and Roy's former estate has just been sold for the full $3 million asking price. It's called Jungle Palace.
But it wasn't sold to Murray, right? Murray Sawchuk?
No, it's Brett Cardin.
Right, because Murray Sawchuk, who's a magician here in town, got some press a few days ago by, I'm touring the Siegfried and Roy house and considering buying it, which I guess is a very good move. But Teller just wrote me an email going, maybe we should buy it just for a joke.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Make Kirby live there. That would be awesome.
Well, they've already got the boots.
That's right.
You know, they're in the closet. Boots. They're in That's the closet. Right.
Well, they were for a while, yeah, those boots. Yeah. I mean, so here's a question with that kind of stuff. I think the Playboy Mansion sold several years ago, Holmby Hills, I don't know, $100 million or something like that. Anyone who's ever been to the Playboy Mansion, it's sort of like seeing the original Batmobile. You go, oh, come on, it's a piece of shit, you know? Yeah. And there's electric tape on the steering wheel and stuff like that, electrical tape and stuff. And it's like, Yeah, that's what the Playboy Mansion was. Yeah, but then the question is do
There's
you
the
keep
grotto.
It?
There's the grotto there made of paper mache.
Do you keep it as a sort of time capsule? I mean, Holmby Hill is some of the most expensive real estate on the planet. Or do you develop it and get rid of it? Like, what do you do? What do you do with Siegfried and Roy's house?
Well, right. What do you do with the Sharon Tate house?
Oh, well, they bulldozed that shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So Brett thought that somebody was going to buy the property and tear it down. So he purchased it, and they thought, okay, maybe we'll make this a tourist attraction or a short-term vacation rental.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they want to keep so at this point, they want to keep it the way it is.
That is a more reasonable desire than the Playboy Mansion, because it's in a bad neighborhood. The real estate's not worth anything.
It is in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, it wasn't when they built it.
Right.
You know, same as the Liberace place, you know.
The museum or his house?
Both. They're the same. You know, the museum was over in a strip mall, but
right.
The house was also a museum. And the thing is that we know you have talked to smart 25-year-olds, really smart 25-year-olds, and ask them who Richard Pryor is.
Right.
And ask them who Johnny Carson is.
Oh, I just had a guess. She wasn't 25. I don't know, 32 or something. I had no idea who. No, because.
So that's Siegfried and Roy are important to our culture for another 3.5 minutes.
Right. Yeah. Sad. But it's
not really sad. It's the way life should go, because there has to be other, like, you know, I get crazy about this. My friends talk about their children. They say, oh, you know, my children like the same music that I do. But I say, you're a shitty parent. You know, when I get in the car with my children, they play the music. When we watch TV together, we watch the stuff that they like. You know, I'm not a guy that would watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia. My son loves to watch it. He loves to watch Inside Job, you know, the cartoon that is goofy. And I enjoy it. It's really good. But I'm not saying, oh, no. Man, you got to see Dawn of the Dead. He wants to see Cocaine Bear. You know, that's where I'm going tomorrow, is to see Cocaine Bear. We're not going to sit home and watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So it's perfect. I mean, Penn and Teller need to be forgotten, because there's other stuff coming down the pike.
Done and done. Yeah. But what I'm kind of saying is maybe, speaking of juggling, kind of do both. Like, keep up, know what's going on, know who Wiz Khalifa is, but also know who Three Dog Night is. Yeah. And we had a kind of emphasis on wanting to know about the past when we were younger. Mm-hmm. That emphasis is gone now. Yeah. And the number one answer for young people when you ask, well, you don't know who Johnny Carson is? Like, I wasn't even born when he was like,
I know. Shakespeare. You weren't born with fucking Shakespeare. You weren't born with Bach. You weren't even born with John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Richard Pryor.
Right.
Learn everything. Mm. Learn. I mean, you know Firesign Theater.
Yes.
Well, Firesign Theater, Phil Proctor, they did a thing called Proctor and Bergman. And I was 18. I was hitchhiking around the country following Proctor and Bergman. Mm-hmm. I would go to the, and I did this performance art thing where I would show up at the club. You know, they were selling only okay in small clubs. I would show up at 8 o'clock in the morning with my friend waiting to buy tickets when the tickets office opened. And you know, they come in for sound check at 4 p.m. And Phil Proctor says, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I just read in the paper that people were lining up for the Stones, 10 hours before the show. And I like you more than the Stones. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting here. It's a sign of respect.
Wow.
And I said, you know, he said, what do you do? I said, it's a performance art thing. My friend and I want to stand here to show we would wait in line to see you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a juggler. I want to do more stuff in comedy. And Phil Proctor said, I said, what's your advice? He said, my advice, know everything.
Mm-hmm.
He said, for comedy, don't worry about comedy or timing or anything. Know everything. Learn Russian. Know the specs on the space station.
Mm-hmm.
Learn to fix a car. Learn everything. And then you'll be funny. So it's the punchline to pay off. So we were on Broadway, many years later, whatever that would be, 20, 25 years later. And Phil Proctor comes to the show when he comes backstage. And I said, you know, Phil, I don't know if you remember me, but I met you in Chicago and you gave me advice on show business. And he said, I don't think I do. I said, really long hair, eye makeup, juggler. He went, you're that guy. Vaguely kind of. Maybe he's lying. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I said, you gave me advice in show business that really helped me. He said, what did I say? Now, remember, you're on Broadway. Think back and tell me precisely what I said, because I could use the help. And I said, you told me, learn everything. And he said, fucking useless. That kind of thing. When people say, you know, you cannot, anyone who talks about music, plus or minus 3 years of their first blowjob, mm-hmm. you throw out everything they say. Mm. Everything they say in those 6 years, mm. we don't care about, because that's nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about important music to us, when you're talking about what you think of different musical forms, as soon as I do the math in my head that that's those three, and you start saying, well, you know, Rat was one of the greatest bands ever, yeah. I kind of go, oh, that's in your window.
My blowjob window.
I'm not listening to you at all.
No, it's very.
But when you start saying, you know, I was listening to Kind of Blue, listen to the Miles Davis thing, and I go, okay, now we're talking.
No, I've said this many times as it pertains to movies, because mm-hmm. I always say you'll talk to someone, especially someone who's younger, and mm-hmm. then they'll say Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, so like the funniest movie ever made, you know, and then I go, that movie came out in 87, and you were born in 70. Oh, you were 14.
Well, this explains Star Wars.
I don't say blowjob, but that's sort of, it's in the pre-post
blowjob. But you have said the words blowjob.
Yes, I've definitely put those two words together. But yes, people need to know the difference between nostalgia and quality.
There's nothing wrong with
There's nothing wrong with it, but let's not mistake it for quality.
Right, exactly.
Right.
If I want to listen to Incense and Peppermints,
right,
Strawberry Alarm Clock. I really, really, this means a lot to me. You say, okay, but we're not going to talk about it.
No, it's basically like saying this tuna casserole that my mom used to make with Hamburger Helper is the best cuisine ever. It's like, no, it brings back memories of before your parents were divorced.
Right.
All right, sorry, Chris, yeah. Go ahead.
All right, I also want to get Penn's thoughts on the upcoming F1 race that's coming to town. Oh. So, it's coming in November. It's the most highly anticipated F1 race ever. Mm-hmm. It's going to be at 10 p.m., so we get all the lights from the strip.
Well, not only do you get the lights, but those cars frequently bottom out and spray sparks out of the back. So at night, it's just that much more dramatic.
Right. So, this is obviously a huge deal.
Street course,
standing room only tickets are going for $500 right now.
Wow.
Yeah, and like other tickets, of course, you know, $2,500 if you want to be near the new MSG Sphere and things like that, because it's going through the whole town. And yeah, the town is just, this whole city is just prepping for this huge event. First time ever it's going to be in Vegas.
Remember what I said about Phil Proctor saying, know everything?
Yeah.
I don't. My wife the other day at supper said to me and my children, you know, this big race is coming to town. We have to learn about racing and get into it. This is a good opportunity for us. She tanked with that. It did not go over well at supper. We all went, we don't know racing.
Oh, yeah, no Nissan Leafs rolling through the streets.
are you going to be here for that? Are you excited about that?
I'm excited about it. I don't know if I'll be here. I'll try to figure it out.
Explain to me what F1 racing is.
F1 racing is just the top of the food chain for any automotive racing, and it is technologically sort of leaps and bounds above whatever there is. And there's probably a lot of innovation probably came out of F1, like no lock braking and stuff. You know, there's lots of innovation that starts in F1 and makes its way to the Fords and the Nissans and everything like that. It's really just saying there's no faster way a human being could get around this circuit other than being in this vehicle. And there's no faster drivers on the planet, because that it ends up being, if you are the fastest person on the planet, you probably don't end up in NASCAR. You probably end up in Indy. You probably end up in F1. And it's just sort of knowing that these 20 guys are the best 20 on the planet, and these cars are the most advanced cars on the planet. I don't know if people articulate it that way, but I think that's what it is. That's the attraction. It's the meritocracy.
You know, you're the one who explained to me in terms of cars, the Houdini wand or the Odessa's ship. When I asked you, when you keep changing parts in a car, what makes it the car? Because, you know, I've got this wand that belonged to Houdini. I changed both the tips, and I changed the piece of wood in the center, but this belonged to him. You said that on Paul Newman's, was it the Porsche that he raced?
I don't think it was a Porsche I was talking about. But I remember we were in a van, and we were doing Celebrity Apprentice, and I think we were driving around somewhere, and you said, well, what is it with these race cars? Because they blow up the engine, they replace the engine, then they get crashed, and they replace the bodywork, and they replace the transmission and stuff like that. So if you did the Houdini's
wand. Except I wouldn't have known the word transmission, but okay.
Example. You said, do you still own Houdini's wand if you've done the tips and you've done the shaft? Yeah. It's all been swapped out. And I just said, you do if someone else doesn't claim to own Houdini's wand, then you still have Houdini's wand.
But I'm glad I'm learning this about. So should I force my family to go and watch this?
I think, you know, it's a spectacle, I think. And I think you like spectacles. I don't mean exclusively, but I mean, it's like I went to the Indianapolis 500 several years ago and I was like, oh, my God, this is a spectacle. You know what I mean? So it's not all about the
But they're going to race like right down Las Vegas Boulevard?
Yeah.
Isn't that dangerous with all people walking across the street?
Cars? We should definitely bring that up.
Flyers to strip clubs and stuff like that. You're right. All right, let's do one more.
All right, well, Robert Blake just died.
Yeah, Beretta.
Yeah.
I didn't Beretta hear that.
In Cold Blood. The great yet controversial actor.
And it's also possible he got away with murdering.
That's the whole point, right? I mean,
right. Possible. But nobody felt sorry for the woman he murdered because she turned out to have a little bit of a dicey past.
That's right, yeah.
I don't think you'd even need the word little bit.
No, a maximum amount of diciness. Yeah.
Yeah, his alibi was the nuttiest alibi ever. I was going in to get a gun.
Yes.
Yeah, and then when I came back, she was shot.
That was Vitello's, I think.
Yeah, it was
across the street from the Two Roads Theater where I started, and we'd hang out at Vitello's before the show. So I knew it well. I knew where he lived and everything. I remember interviewing Robert Blake on Loveline, I got to say 1998 or something like that, and he struck me as one of the most dour, depressed guys in the world.
Well, you heard what he said in an interview just 2 years ago. I was born entirely alone. I lived entirely alone. I'm going to die entirely alone. That is not a Hallmark card.
We were in Culver City at the time at Westwood One, and there was this weird hotel that was just sort of across the parking lot. And he said, I lived in that hotel when I was like nine, and he was a child star, I guess.
Yeah,
but I guess his parents were poor or abusive or whatever.
He was dancing on the street when he was two or three for tips.
I mean, he grew up in a sort of poverty and a kind of a generation and a kind of you could do whatever you wanted with kids kind of era that just doesn't exist anymore. It somehow got seared into him. And I just remember thinking, this is the saddest soul I've ever really spoken to. It was just oozing out of him. And
did you like Beretta?
I watched Beretta. I watched every cop show when I was a kid. He had a cockatiel, I think.
Yeah.
Bird named Fred.
Fred.
Yeah, and that was enough.
That he hated.
When I was the right age. And he would, you know, he had his little catchphrases. You can take that to the bank.
And the other one, all the tough guys I know are in the jailhouse or the graveyard.
Right.
And don't do the crime if
you can't do the time. Was that Sammy Davis Jr.?
He was saying that. Yeah.
Right. So what is he? Did he make it to 90?
89.
So,
no, he didn't. But yeah, I mean, and you're right. So,
but you know, there's some mileage on Robert Blake. I mean, drugs and so on. I'm always amazed that people with that incredible—well, you know, the obvious example, of course, is Keith Richards. But
right.
But it's amazing that Robert Blake would live that long.
I agree.
Yeah, especially, and yeah, everyone did say he was very depressed. He was a miserable human being.
Yes, he was. And I guess he grew up in L.A. I mean,
no, he was crazy. He's from New York.
Oh, he's from New York.
And then he moved out because his dad thought there might be a buck in movies for him.
Oh, as a young child.
Yeah.
Spanky and Our Gang?
Our Gang. He, I mean, he was there with Alfalfa.
Yeah.
And which is, just to make it clear, I'm too old for that stuff. But like I know about Bach, I also know about Our Gang.
Yeah. Yeah. And the night he was acquitted, they all went to Vitello's and partied.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. He must have hated that woman. Jesus, it's so, I don't know. It's so sad when someone just, I mean, he had to be thinking shortly before he died. Like, really? This is it? You just go through life just miserable and dour. And I get it. These are all scars that he carries from his youth. But at a certain point, man, turn the page.
Yeah.
There are other people that have had horrendous.
Yeah,
horrendous,
yes,
childhoods. That's true. That don't come off that way. And there's other people that were absolutely as bitter as Robert Blake, who had wonderful childhoods. One of the most disturbing things ever is, it's good that I can't remember the name. It's actually wonderful. I can't remember the name.
Kirby.
But the shooters, the school shooter inventors, in the 90s Colorado.
Yeah.
Dylan, whatever his name was. Dylan Klebold.
I don't want to remind him.
And his partner. Yeah. They did extensive research with the parents of them. Parents are kind of perfect. Mm. They saw all the warning signs. They tried to get help. Every piece of advice you could ever get about how not to turn out a school shooter, they followed. Mm. You know, and that is the horror, the absolute horror. You know, it used to be with anomalies, horrible anomalies. We blamed, like, you know, this kid's head's blowing up because his mother was scared by an elephant when she was pregnant. Or we used to blame witches. And now we're in the period of time where we do blame the parents. It's always the parents' fault. And that may be just as superstitious as what we did before. Because, you know, there's that, I Don't Like Mondays by the Boomtown Rats. The silicone chip inside his head switched off to overload.
Yeah.
Which may be all of it. You know, that was the...
So that's kid shot up at school and they said, why'd you do it? And he said, I don't like Mondays.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that it's our grasping at answers that tries to say that Robert Blake was a miserable prick because he had this horrible upbringing.
Worst eulogy ever. Keep going.
Yeah, it's a stirring tribute.
Started off with I Love Beretta. We're going down the right road. No, I think...
You know what I mean? I'm not saying it exclusively.
But what it is we try to make sense of things because when horrible things happen, we try to make sense of them. Like when an airliner crashes and they go, oh, well, the screw jack that operated the tail that didn't work. We then go, okay, they figured it out.
Right.
And they just went, it just crashed because it crashed. And now we're scared shitless.
It just fell out of the sky.
We're scared shitless to get on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And when a kid just does something horrible, we search desperately for motivation.
We also do that.
Because we want to control it.
The simple one is the rape one. You know, she was wearing a short skirt.
Right.
And she was she looked a little bit slutty on the street. We're only saying that so we have a reason. You should be able to walk down the street absolutely butt-ass naked with porno stapled to your ass, and people should rape you because they don't rape.
Right.
You know, it was that great, I mean, Chris Rock, first of all, if you're going to slap someone publicly, do not pick one of the most articulate
people with a microphone.
We have alive.
Do it to the homeless like I do. Yeah, this guy's a big microphone and a big audience.
And you know what he ended up saying when he said, why didn't you hit him back?
Oh, he said his parents raised him right. Well, so the parents do make a difference.
Yeah. We tied it all together.
All right, well, let's bring it home. Let me give Penn a nice plug here. TV series Penn & Teller, Fool Us, is season 10. It should be. 10 seasons just got picked up on the CW, and then The Game, You Lying Sack, that's available at Walmart.
And don't forget my novel, Random.
Oh, your novel, Random.
I wrote a novel called Random.
Available where you find finer books. And then, of course, the Rio, the live show. That's tickets at PennandTeller.com. Well, I always look forward to talking to you, my friend. I always know how easy it is on me to come in here and let you do all the heavy lifting. So,
what a pleasure. Just an absolute pleasure.
Great.
And Robert Blake, we did love Beretta.
Okay? We did love it. And you can take that to the bank. And until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Penn Jillette saying mahalo.
That was Penn Sunday School.
That was Penn Sunday School.
Cha, cha, cha.
And to our listening ears,
you become naked. You got anybody to thank there, Matt Donnelly?
Yeah, I want to thank people who love supporting the show with a little bit of jingle from their own wallets, and man, do we appreciate it. Thank you to Jeremy R22, Winter Wierkowski, Kristen Kladick, Michael Cohen, Dr. Scooplittle, Joe Mastrangelo, Jeremiah Jenkins. I will say anything you want me to say if you subscribe at patreon.com/pen. I am like a Matt puppet. Jesse Miller, Alexander Hoffman, Danny Olwine, Stephen Volcano, Jim, the magician who would love to perform on the new Penn and Teller block trick, Naked, Scooped Mids, and Paul McBride. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.